The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Horn Family Automotive Studios.
It's a good Thursday morning. Thanks for being with us, Brad Sesmatt, Sports360AZ.com. On AZ Central Sports, coming up on the program, we will have Sean Elliott, U of A legend, Sean Elliott with us. Today's the NBA trade deadline. Remember Sean Elliott was traded for Dennis Rodman at one time? Wonder what his NBA trade deadline days were like. And just the day that you're traded for Dennis Rodman. I want to talk to Sean Elliott about the Spurs are in town tomorrow night. March Madness, of course. He's a big U of A guy. Sean Elliott comes up here in about 15 minutes. As we continue our coverage of the NFL Scouting Combine, Eric will be there tonight, and he'll be there through the weekend. We have our coverage brought to you by Santan Ford from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. Part of our coverage, though, is Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, the former quarterback, now ESPNer, breaks down Johnny Football. Do you take him at number one? Teddy Bridgewater, Blake Bortles. What are the warts in these guys? It just takes one crazy owner to say, hey, we think getting Christian Ponder would be terrific if we're the Minnesota Vikings. Or, you know, Jake Locker is going to turn our entire franchise around. No, I think Blaine Gabbert is the guy that we take with our first round pick. Owners are nuts, okay? And you see these franchises make these horrendous decisions on quarterbacks. So we'll talk with Brock about that and who he'd take with the number one overall pick and, you know, splice apart Johnny Manziel. That comes up in about 30 minutes. Get us off and running today. Our Facebook question here is Eric Sorensen.
Hi, Brad. Well, today is a big birthday in the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
A legend, Charles Barkley, the round mound of rebound, excuse me, turns 51.
There's a joke there, you know.
I know. I just
stepped in.
Put my own foot in my mouth. But anyway, today we ask you, it's pretty simple. If you could party with any past or present Arizona athlete on their birthday.
On their birthday.
Who would it be? And, of course, my answer is Charles Barkley.
Charles Barkley.
Duh.
Yeah, that's pretty good. This would sound gratuitous if I went into some of the times where I've actually gone out with guys on their birthdays.
Right.
So I'm not going to do it. But there was one time with Charles where I actually had to sleep in my car for about an hour.
Yeah.
And that was,
I can imagine.
That was during TV time. So
I would think maybe like the least fun birthday party would have to be like Sean Miller. My guess is Sean Miller doesn't even smile at his own birthday party.
Explode. So. Sean Miller is just, you just know that he's going to go nuclear at some point.
Yeah.
No, that wouldn't be fun. I think Bill Frieder, I was with Bill Frieder for
That'd
a birthday.
Be a good one.
It was a little different, a little random.
I bet Larry Fitzgerald has pretty cool birthday parties.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
he'd like take you to Africa or could do something cool because he's always on the road.
It depends on what your definition of cool is. Is it sitting at a table with a bunch of guys that you see on television or you see in another walk of life, and then you're sitting with them and you're breaking bread and you realize they're just like you, except they have a decimal point in a different location than you.
They have more commas in their bank account.
But they have a lot of issues in their life.
We all do.
I mean, it's these guys. I know some of you are sitting here at your job right now and you hate what you're doing. Get out. Go do something you like. But if you think it's just, well, if I were still a running back, there's a reason why sports is so popular. If I just was able to make it as a baseball player, as a football player, I'd have all this money, and for my birthday, we'd go buy a boat, and we'd go up by an island, and we'd party our tails off. Most of these guys that we see later in life in their 40s and 50s, they've blown all their money. They have
more money, more problems, right? More money, more problems.
You know, there's people right now that are saying, yeah. If I had more money, the world would be greater. So that's fine. I like your question today. And yeah, happy birthday to Charles, 51. Of course, a big part of the Arizona sports scene. Let's get you caught up. Some of the things on my mind in the world of sports brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino in the beautiful White Mountains. And of course, the Winter Games are just coming up. Tomorrow, Saturday, you're looking to head out of the valley or around the state up to the White Mountains outside of Pine Top. The Honda Resort and Casino, that is the place for the winter games, all sorts of things around the dogs and food and fun and games. Of course, you can stay at the Honda Resort and Casino, great place. You can pull down that slot tomorrow night or Saturday night. You can head over to Sunrise, do some skiing. The Honda Resort and Casino, it's all there for you at the Honda Resort and Casino. Obviously, today is a big day with and tomorrow with the USA hockey that is taking place. The NHLers, yeah, I like this. Man, just blow right through me. It's good. The NHL hockey tomorrow takes on Canada. And so when we see that an NHLer got hurt, one of the players on Team USA got hurt, tore up his knee, there's not been a decision made yet about the 2018 Olympics, if in fact NHLers are going to continue to play. I'm of the opinion we want to see professionals play. We want to see them get hurt. We want to see them leave their bodies out on the floor. There's a reason why the ratings are so great when Bodie Miller's skiing at 60 miles an hour. I don't think it's because I heard my wife in the other room yelling at the TV, go, go, go. Or when he makes an error, it's, ah! That's a skier. On the ice, I don't see these guys doing commercial endorsements. It's like that. What is the one girl, Gracie Gold? Great. I'm so annoyed with Gracie Gold at this point. These people that have kids and then put their names together to simply market them. Or the guy that looks like Eric Burns, who does the skating on the ice that won the other night. He looks exactly like him, separated at birth. And while they're competing, we go to a commercial break and the commercial is them doing Visa. You haven't won anything. We don't know who you are, Charlie, other than your name is Charlie. And the girl that you're with, you've known since she was a little runt. And now you guys go out and represent our country, but you've already cashed in. Well, what about LeBron James? What? It's far more interesting to see the best in the world get challenged by Angola. It is in basketball. And on the ice tomorrow, when the United States is playing against Canada, this country will be riveted to hockey tomorrow. I love what's going on at the Olympic Games with hockey. Most everything else, take it. I love seeing Bob Costas's lazy eye. I think it's terrific television to see a guy who's so revered, but he can't get his eye to perform when he needs it to. I think it's kind of entertaining. I feel bad for him. I like Bob Costas. There's nothing he can do. He's going to try to gut it out. And I find myself just kind of attracted to his pink eye or lazy eye or whatever you want to call it. So that's going on. Sean Elliott here in a couple of minutes. The Combine. So Steve Keim met with the media this morning. Eric's going to be there tomorrow for Bruce Arians. And then through the weekend, Steve Keim said today in Indianapolis that Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick, he actually said the quarterbacks in their division make it, quote, important for the Cardinals to get more athletic on defense. It means getting bigger on the back end. I read that quote and I think safety, or rush ends. Just get six of them and send them one after the other like Seattle's been doing. Kind of interesting to hear that view. Here is Mike Mayock, the dean, the guru of all this draft stuff. It's not Mel Kiper anymore. It's Mike Mayock. And all the conversation is about Johnny Manziel and parsing him apart. Here's Mike Mayock.
What I said about Manziel is that the first tape I watched was Alabama, and I thought it was a phenomenal game. And when I turned the tape off, the first thought that went into my mind is he's a combination of Flutie and Fran Tarkenton. And I think there's some significance to that. I think they were two great football players, and I think he brought the best elements of their two games.
Flutie and Fran Tarkenton, and you're going to use the number one overall pick on him. We'll talk with Brock Heard in about 20 minutes, ESPN college football analyst. Who would you take number one overall? Would it be a guy like Manziel? How about Jadeveon Clowney? Clowney, the defensive lineman out of South Carolina. Steve Spurrier yesterday questioned his work ethic. It's okay. It's nothing great. Here is Mike Mayock from the NFL Network, the best in the business, on Clowney.
When he turns it on tape, it's phenomenal. And sometimes it's on, sometimes it's off. And there's been all kinds of stuff since the day he signed with that program about him, work ethic, off the field. You know, how much time and effort are you going to have to spend with this kid trying to make sure he's at practice, he's on time, he's at every meeting? Is he going to be ready to play every Sunday?
Those are great, great insights. Gil Brandt, the dean of scouting. This morning, 19 offensive linemen measured 6'5 or taller. Mom, why didn't you have me be an offensive lineman rather than a basketball guy? I could have made boatloads of money. I'm 6'8". The tallest is Kansas State's Luke Lucas, 6'8", 3/8". Taylor Lewan out of Chaparral came in at 6'7", and 1/8". We saw Taylor Lewin, Eric, when Michigan was here for the Buffalo Wild Wings. I'd say that's about right.
Yeah, he's a big guy. Taylor Lewin, definitely a beast. And he was a very, very good player, four-year starter at Michigan.
Six offensive linemen had 35-inch or longer arms. 35-inch arms or longer. Luke Lucas, 36 and three quarters. Dang. And the Wunderlich test. There's all these websites that have popped up today. One of them is footballiqscore.com, where you can actually take the Wunderlich test. I might do that on the air a little bit later today and see if I match some of these brain surgeons that have come out of the combine. Today's the NBA trade deadline. The Suns and Pau Gasol. Would the Suns part with any of their first-round picks to get Pau Gasol? I would not be opposed to Pau Gasol, but that's not my first priority. My first priority is Kevin Love of the Minnesota Timberwolves, plain and simple. Last night, Suns game, it was a back-to-back. They ended up last night finding a way to beat the Celtics. Here is Jeff Hornacek on last night's game.
They were out hustling us. They were, you know, we had the same issues in Denver last night in terms of boxing out. They're killing us on the boards. We gave up 10 offensive rebounds. We had 14 turnovers, but we told them, you know, you still have the lead.
And they find a way to win. This is a good win for them. Okay, the game was not pretty, but when you play back to back and you play overtime in Denver, and you come home and you shoot 43%. Some nights, it's like watching pigs mate, okay? That's what it's going to be like during the course of an 82-game NBA season. Last night was one of those nights. Nobody wants to see pigs mate. On the other side, Sean Elliott will be with us. We'll talk about the NBA trade deadline and U of A basketball. Brock here in about 20 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com, AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360az.
Sports 360 AZ, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat with you on White Mountain Radio and on Twitter as well. Always good to jump on board with you day in and day out. We have plenty of content over on sports360az.com as well. Sean Elliott joins us now, two-time NBA All-Star, former great San Antonio Spurs analyst. The Spurs have been on the road forever. What's it been, Sean? Was it 11 days? You've had like eight games now in a row?
Yeah, we've played eight. We got our last one in Phoenix on Friday. So, you know, it's typical for us. It's our rodeo road trip. It's pretty much the whole month of February. And, you know, surprisingly, it's been good for us. But, you know, believe it or not, especially coming into this year, I didn't like the way it's set up, this road trip set up, because we were just banged up and not healthy, but we've managed to play well.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. I mean, Patty Mills was terrific for you last night with Tony sitting out. So today's NBA trade deadline, Sean, and I'm just curious from your end, you were traded once for Dennis Rodman. Do you remember the day that you were traded and what went through your mind, and give the fans kind of a feel about trade deadline day?
Yeah, well, mine was actually during the summertime when I was traded, and you know, I was kind of taken by surprise. I mean, there were rumblings that I was going to be traded anyways, because when you looked at our team, I was pretty much the only tradable guy, because the next guy that people wanted was David Robinson. You know, the Spurs definitely weren't going to give him up, so I was a little taken aback, and you know, for me, I kind of looked at it as an opportunity to you know, excel in Detroit, and you know, that really didn't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a situation that, you know, I really wasn't comfortable with later on when I got there. But you know, it's a blow for players. I mean, you know, I think a lot of fans sit there and say, well, a guy gets traded and you know, it's like you're a robot, but you're not. You're a human being, and you take those trades personally.
Did you have to uproot? Did you have to do some huge life changes when you were traded?
Well, for me, it was a huge life change because, as you know, I'm an Arizona kid.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I tell people all the time, half of my problem in Detroit, honestly, was the weather. Hmm. I mean, I spent my first 21 years of my life in Tucson, Arizona. I get drafted to San Antonio, where the climate's pretty much the same. You know, the winter time for me was, you know, 75 degrees. And so I got to Detroit. It was the worst winter in 10 years of January and February. It didn't get above zero. So I was way out of my element.
And so today, you're with a very stable organization. I would say one of the best organizations, not just in basketball, but in all of sport. Today, when you see guys like Steve Blake being traded from the Lakers up to Golden State or other deals that may come down today, is there a sense that takes you back to you've been in that locker room where guys are wondering where they're going to be and the anxiety that they're going through?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've seen it happen plenty of times. And it's not a good feeling because you've played, you know, a couple years with guys or several years with guys, and all of a sudden they're gone and you're bringing in somebody else that you're trying to fit in, and you don't know the personalities, and you know, you're trying to get adjusted to each other. So, it creates a little bit of turmoil. And furthermore, you know, when I look at the trade deadline, I can only remember one trade that really was significant and helped the team win a title, and that's going back to when Clyde Drexler was traded to Houston midseason from Portland, and they didn't look too good after the trade. It took them a little while to adjust, but they did end up winning the title. But for the most part, Brad, I think, you know, most of the trade deadline stuff are nothing trades, and teams are trying desperately to do something midseason, and most of the time, you know, it's a wash. You know, nothing really comes of it.
And sometimes, Sean, I think down here, I'll give you an example. Miles Plumlee had played very well for the Phoenix Suns until about two weeks ago when the Pau Gasol trade rumors started popping up. And all of a sudden, Miles Plumlee doesn't look nearly to be the same player. I think it can affect guys mentally leading into the deadline.
Oh, no question. No question about it. He's probably looking over his shoulder, wondering if he's going to get that call, to, if he's going to be traded or not. And you know, I like the way he's played, to be honest with you. I think Plumlee's been a steal for you guys.
Yes.
He's a terrific athletic player. I like bigs that finish around the rim, that try to throw the ball down, that aren't soft in the paint area, you know, trying to lay it up and any of that nonsense. And I like the way he finishes. I like him on the defensive end. He blocks shots. He has a presence. And for me, you know, I like that youth. You know, I like that enthusiasm. And you're exactly right. You start hearing rumblings that you're going to be traded, and it definitely starts to affect your play. You start thinking out there on the court a little bit too much, and you're not nearly as relaxed.
Talking with Sean Elliott for a couple of minutes. Spurs in town tomorrow night, taking on the Phoenix Suns. It wraps up a 9-game road trip for San Antonio. One last question on your team. It's one of those that you look at and say they just need to maintain, stay healthy, get better, get everything ready for mid-April. Are they right on track?
Yes and no. I mean, we're kind of beat up right now, so you know, that's kind of disrupted our rhythm a little bit. But at the same time, we've had we found a silver lining. You know, when guys go down, other guys step up.
Mm-hmm.
And you just you know, mentioned Patty Mills. He's been exceptional. He's been absolutely terrific throughout this road trip, and you know, just spelling Tony Parker. He can shoot the ball. He's a blur in the open court. He's extremely aggressive, and he's taken this opportunity when Tony Parker's gone down. And, you know, other guys have stepped up in the absence. You know, we didn't have Tim Duncan last night. He didn't play. Thiago Splitter stepped up and played well. Marco Bellinelli has been terrific all year long. Manu Ginobili just got back, and he's been playing well. Danny Green just got back from injury. He's shooting the ball better than he did at the beginning of the year. So right now we're our reserves and our second unit, they've been playing extremely well, and they're getting quality minutes, and they're playing in big situations. So that's only going to help us come playoff time.
And really, Sean, it's about where are you at in June from a year ago, not even a year ago, 8 months ago, when you walk off the court against Miami. There was not much of a gap, if any gap. If you guys played 10 times, you may end up having a ring on your finger. Is the gap right there, or no gap at all between yourselves and the defending champions as you see the course of the season unfolding?
Well honestly, you know, if you ask everybody in that locker room, we feel like we won that series. You know, we were 30 seconds away from beating them. We had to make we had several opportunities to make two free throws. We had two opportunities to make two free throws. We had two opportunities to get a defensive rebound, and we have those guys have championship rings, and that happened in Game 6. And we still came back with a gutty effort in Game 7, and we had our chances in that game as well. So, and we I feel like we were the better team. It didn't end up coming out that way. And I think that gave our guys a lot of incentive, gave them a little bit more fire going into this season. And I think the way we play now and the moves that we've made, specifically bringing in Marco Bellinelli, who's been terrific, a great playmaker, and of course you guys saw him win the 3-point shooting contest last week over the All-Star break. I think he's made us even better, and that whole experience has made us better. So come playoff time, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm not so sure there is a gap. If we have a chance and we get there again, I think we'll take advantage of it.
Before I let you go, what do you make out of the Cats at this point? They've gone through some adversity midpoint of the season. They lose one of their best players. I think it's all about just the adjustments. Last night they put York on the court. He gets 15 for him, a little bit more outside presence. What do you make out of Sean Miller's team right now?
I like his talent. I love what he's done with his team, coaching them. I think they're terrific defensively. I think they could get better really on both ends of the court. I think they're a little limited offensively. But, you know, honestly, Brandon Ashley to me was arguably their best player because he made shots down the stretch. He was a great defender. That always comes into it with his length. And I think losing him was a bigger blow than anybody's talking about. And so they're going to have the work cut out for him. I think their championship aspirations took a hit with him going down, but they still have a lot of great tools with Tarzewski and Nick Johnson. Aaron Gordon is still coming along, and I like Hollis Jefferson. So, I still think that they have a chance, but they're going to have to play perfect ball.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you on that. I think the period of adjustment here as they get towards the Pac-12 tournament, it'll be pretty interesting to see what this team looks like because the loss of Ashley, the length that he had on both ends of the floor, I think they missed.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time as always, Sean. Thank you.
Oh, anytime, Brad.
Sean Elliott with us, color analyst for the San Antonio Spurs. Great San Antonio Spur, great U of A Wildcat. Always a pleasure to have him on the show. Up next, Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst. So let's break down these quarterbacks. Brock had done that this past year for ESPN in studio. He joins us quite often on the show, but I want to get a little deeper now. It just takes one crazy owner, one, to say, our answer is Christian Ponder. And the Viking fans are there saying, are you kidding me? Or it's Jake Locker. We've got Blaine Gabbert. So how about Blake Bortles? Is it the same deal? How about Teddy Bridgewater? How about Johnny Manziel? Brock Huard, ESPN college football analyst, is next. I'm Brad Sussmat, sports360az.com, and AZ Central Sports, White Mountain Radio, and on Twitter at Brad Sussmat.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at sports360az.
All right, let's turn our attention now to the Combine. Eric is going to be in Indianapolis covering the Combine inside and out for us, chasing players, chasing agents, chasing front office executives, all about, the direction the Cardinals are going to go at number 20. That's one side of it. But also, it's the quarterbacks in this year's draft. As we're sitting here today, is there a definitive number one overall pick if you're Houston? Is it Johnny Manziel? Is it Blake Bortles, who we saw here in the Fiesta Bowl? Is it Teddy Bridgewater? All things quarterbacks related and much more. ESPN's college football analyst, good friend of the show, Brock Huard, comes on for a couple of minutes. If you're Houston, who do you take number one if you take a quarterback this year?
Yeah, I don't take a quarterback number one. I take Clowney without question. I think he's a freak of freaks. I think he's 19 years old, has a lot to learn. And the perfect environment would be Brian Cushing, J.J. Watt, a front seven that's already pretty good. And when you add a freak of nature, because there's just not many Jadeveon Clowneys that walk around, I think he's even more explosive than Mario Williams was a number of years back when they were in a similar conundrum. And when you compare him with real pros and realize he's 19 years of age and still has immense upside, to me, I don't think there's any debate about that. I don't think, as much as I like Teddy Bridgewater, I just don't think as far as a freakish stud talent rarity, you're going to get anything matching Jadeveon Clowney in the quarterback position.
Even though Steve Spurrier said his work ethic, quote, isn't the greatest, end quote. Is that just Steve Spurrier being Steve Spurrier? You've dealt with him, Brock.
No, we had them at the end of the year. We did the Clemson-South Carolina game, his final game when he ran out with the seniors, and I remember chatting with his defensive coordinator, who was very much on the record and says, hey, listen, he doesn't love the weight room. He's a guy that gets away with it because of his God-gifted talents and his ability. And as I said over and over again, his freakish once-in-a-generation kind of makeup of size, length, speed, explosion. And he's got to be a little bit more of a pro. But he's also a teenager, and he was a teenager for 3 years there at South Carolina. And I think that is easily forgotten and lost. And there's nothing better for a young player to come in who will still be striving and earning an even bigger payday to do it around some of the real pros. And one of, you know, if not the best defensive player in all the game, he's on one hand in J.J. Watt. I think that'd be an ideal situation.
Isn't there some concern, though? If I get where you're coming from on the 19 years of age, but if the kid doesn't have the motor, can you take the risk that he's going to get the motor?
Well, to me, the motor for a defensive lineman, you got to be a little bit careful there of how many guys play every single snap and every single play.
That's
and
true.
What a motor looks like in individual cases and looks like for different guys. Now, will a guy learn how to be a pro? Can a guy learn how to be a pro? Can he grow in that maturity? And if he does so off of the field and pays attention to all those details, that should help him and should propel him on the field as well. And when I covered him and when I've watched tape of him, does he play every single play 100 miles an hour? No. When I watch NFL games, do every single NFL defensive lineman play every single play 100 miles an hour? Well, not the guys that got to play every snap. You know, I watched the Seahawks team win a world championship, and I'm convinced of this. Those defensive linemen are at their best when they are fighting and starving for reps. You know, a Cliff Averill, a Michael Bennett, a Brandon Mebane, go down the list, Chris Clemens of the Seattle Seahawks. Go look and see. They played less snaps than any other defensive line in the NFL because of it. They were fresh. They were ready. They were fighting to get on that field and make plays. And I think that's a more ideal scenario for a Clowney. And he has a front seven there that he's going to be pushed and challenged to do so.
ESPN college football analyst Brock Huard with Brad Sismat. The combine getting underway. The quarterbacks, let's focus on them now because your tweet yesterday, Johnny Manziel, no comparison. It's like Gary Payton and John Stockton comparing Manziel and Russell Wilson. So what I took from your tweet is you're getting run over by these fans that want you to compare Wilson and Manziel.
Yes, and it's ridiculous. I mean, other than their ability to extend the play, which is something they both have, and I think an innate ability or something that's grown in their game because they've had to with their size, that's it. They're both about 6 foot tall, and they both extend the play and have tremendous creativity. But that's where it starts and where it ends. When you want to talk about their makeup, when you want to talk about their maturity, when you want to talk, most importantly, about their arm strength, that's where they are vastly different guys. And I'd be real careful if anybody out there says, oh, if Russell Wilson can do it, well, this guy can do it. Vastly different systems, incredibly different arm talents. While they both will create, Manziel creates to run, Russell Wilson creates the throw. So, yeah, I'd be careful about trying to compare it. And you're right, a lot of people have.
What does Manziel not do well that concerns you?
I think it's just his overall arm strength and arm talent, and then he's got some real fundamental issues. And that's also where a Russell Wilson is so maniacal in his approach and his attention to detail and his footwork and his fundamentals. And that's why, to me, he's a John Stockton in so many ways, whereas a Johnny Manziel was the glove and a guy that we all loved here, Gary Payton, in the way that he played. He's swashbuckling. He's unsound. He, just like Gary, didn't have a great jumper. He makes up for it in different ways. But there's a lot of fundamental development that's got to come and some arm strength that I don't know if it will ever come with a Johnny Manziel. Now, arm strength's not at the top of the list. It's not at the top of my list for guys that can be tremendous pros. You've seen many of them in the Hall of Fame that can't throw a ball 70 yards or with tremendous velocity, but it's accuracy, it's anticipation. But most of those guys that didn't have tremendous arms had really good timing and really good fundamentals. And those are two avenues that as Johnny progresses and projects into the NFL that he's going to have to hone and sharpen.
Did you like or did you dislike his challenging the Texans?
I didn't really care for it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That's who he is. Mm-hmm. So I can appreciate. I've grown to appreciate Richard Sherman. I'll say it that way. Not necessarily the way that I like it, not the way that I go about my business. But at least is consistent with who they are. And Johnny Manziel, not being a phony, not being a fake, he's being genuine to who he is as a competitor. That's the way he feels. that he's entitled to it, and some people will like it. My own personal taste and the way I go about trying to do my business, that's not necessarily my mode of operation, but it is for Richard Sherman. We've loved him in Seattle, and just as many people love Johnny for being Johnny.
ESPN's college football analyst Brock Huard with Brad Sussmat. You've liked Bridgewater all year long, as you and I have talked off and on through the last 6 months. What is it about him that you like so much?
Attention to detail, fundamentals, playing within a pro system, good size, I think a very good arm. I don't think he has an elite arm. I was chatting with one of my buddies and colleagues that I trust and respect a lot that studies these quarterbacks and has seen many of them. That's Trent Dilfer through his Elite 11 camp, and he said his arm certainly doesn't wow you or didn't wow you at the time that he spent with them. You know, he is a little bit slight. And I think when you're talking the number one pick, and if you're the Houston Texans, I think some of that frame would concern you a little bit. But the guy is unbelievably tough. He's available. He's durable. He's productive. In the biggest moments, he played his best football against Miami, against Florida, against the upper competition. Yeah, there's a lot I like about Teddy Bridgewater, and I think he's the most pro-ready by a long ways of any of these quarterbacks.
You know, I met Blake Bortles, had him on the show, spent some time with him during the Fiesta Bowl, was very impressed with him. An under-the-radar guy in one sense for the program he was at, had some adversity on the road that they were able to push through and win. Very impressed in visiting with him, Brock. What do you make out of Bortles?
Yeah, I'd say solid. I think he's very, very solid. And I think in the day and age before everybody overdrafted quarterbacks a number of years ago, I think he's a second-round guy that could have been, I think, in is most ideally suited to go someplace where he can learn a little bit, study a little bit, not be thrown right into the fire. But every aspect of his game, his size, his arm strength, just some of his X's and O's in a pro-style system that he's grown and developed under George O'Leary and their style of play, very, very solid. I get very leery of a number one pick. I get very leery of a first-round guy that you're going to build everything around. The level of competition, very questionable. You know, a number of weeks and a number of games where he could coast. Unfortunately, the one game that I saw him up close and personal was probably one of his worst games of the year, and that was a Houston game that he was pretty sloppy with some turnovers, and I think his arm is good. I don't think his arm is elite, but yeah, very, very solid and a guy that you could win with in the NFL, but I don't think I can stamp and say franchise quarterback, build around him, and you're set for the next 10 years.
Is it because there was the Christian Ponder and Jake Locker a couple of years ago,
yes,
that scenario?
And Blaine Gabbert in that year that everybody was overdrafted.
Yeah,
and I think you're going to continue to see that as teams. You know, my co-host and I were chatting today. You know, the Seahawks are going to go to the combine. Your producer's going to go out there. And what's the chatter going to be? Well, the chatter's going to be, boy, look how these Seahawks are the youngest team in the league. And look at the Seahawks and the 49ers and what they were able to do and have the two best rosters in the league because, well, they've got their quarterback on the cheap for the next 4 years. And if we gamble and we hit it right, and yeah, maybe we're overdrafting a little bit, but if we get the right guy at that position dirt cheap for 4 years, look how it sets us up in so many different ways to continue to accelerate the rest of our roster. So I think because of that, you're going to continue to see some real overdrafting of quarterbacks that aren't Andrew Luck, that aren't Russell Wilson, that aren't Colin Kaepernick, that aren't guys that you, at least right now, other than Teddy Bridgewater, for me, that I can say, yeah, I'd love to build around that guy.
And you know, too, there are crazy owners out there. The intangible in all this, from my view, is somebody's going to take Manziel because they want to sell shirts and put butts in seats and have TV ratings versus maybe looking at what is the downside here. I'm not saying he's not going to do well in the league. It's just the intangibles between these three, because these are three at the top that people are talking about. You may have other people as well, but it seems like Manziel has this star appeal that, you know, it just takes one crazy owner to say, we can make Cleveland great now by just having Johnny here.
Yeah, and if I'm a GM there or a head coach there, I would say, you know what, owner, you're kind of crazy, and that's idiotic. And you know what, look at the 49ers, and look at the Seahawks, and look at the Broncos, and look at the New England Patriots, and look at the best teams in this league. They don't do idiotic things like that to set back our organization, because that's what you're doing. If he's not your best, most talented player, filling your need, and a guy that you can count on to win you football games, you're not going to have a job. I mean, the NFL, those head coaches, I think half the league has turned over in the last 2 years. I think I was counting up the number of new guys, and it's hard enough to sustain. And then when you're idiotic like that and you do things for a bottom line or to sell jerseys or tickets,
yep.
you really don't give your coach or your organization an opportunity to sustain any level of prolonged success.
You have a quarterback I haven't mentioned that you really like, that you think, Brad, there's value here late.
You know what? The one component I would add to this conversation, Brad, is as much as we're talking about May 2014, you cannot in any way not look at 2015. I mean, that's the one thing that John Schneider really looked at. John Schneider was really, really intrigued and enthralled by Andy Dalton. And in fact, in many ways, wanted to take him with the 25th pick when he sat there in the draft. And some of the feedback and I think some of the pullback was, hold on a second, look at what's coming in next year's class. Look at what else. Look how we can continue to build and add the roster for the following year when you love Russell Wilson and you can take him in the third round and really set up that foundation. And next year, when we have this conversation, we're going to be talking, I think, about franchise guys. A Mariota is a franchise guy. A Brett Hundley is a franchise guy. A Jameis Winston is a franchise guy. So if you're one of those owners or one of those situations where you're in between, I like this guy, I like Bortles, I like Manziel, I like some of these, but I don't love them. Well, if you're in that situation, I think you got to steer and look to 2015 rather than pull the trigger and be in between in 2014.
One last question, and if you don't have a good feel on this, it's fine. I'm just curious. You've seen Arizona State. You've seen U of A. Kadeem Carey, Marion Grice at running back. Will Sutton, who had a disappointing finish on the defensive front, was Pac-12 Player of the Year. Carl Bradford was a wrecking ball. Is there anybody on the ASU U of A side at the combine or in the upcoming draft that you really like or really concerns you?
Well, I'm really intrigued by Will Sutton because I looked at a couple draft reports and I've got some friends that are NFL scouts. And during the season when I have games, I have those guys send along the different notes. And there's the jury is still very much out on Will Sutton and just his overall measurables. Productive, quick. I think he's unique. And as much as you want to talk about the quarterback position and Russell Wilson and changing the landscape and how everybody evaluates quarterbacks, well, I think what Seattle did this year with that defensive line that I referenced and a Michael Bennett that could play inside and play outside and a Pete Carroll and somewhat Jim Harbaugh as well with these top rosters saying, you know what, I'll take guys with different sizes and different shapes and we can fit him into some different roles. He's a guy that's had tremendous productivity. And I'll be really curious, both he and Bradford, to see physically where they measure. I love Kadeem Carey. I think he's going to get a lot of carries and be very, very productive with a lot of yards in the NFL. But running backs are just kind of, unfortunately, not nearly as sexy unless you're an absolute Adrian Peterson freak, which I don't think physically he's quite there. So a number of guys to look at. Now, I'll answer your previous question, too. Taj Boyd. If Taj Boyd falls down in this draft and he falls into the middle rounds, and even now, I see he's outside of the top 10, I believe, in Mel Kiper's list. He's a guy that's been unbelievably productive and elevated a university at Clemson there and really brought their program back to unprecedented heights. He'd be a guy that I would keep an eye on as a middle-round value.
As always, appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks.
You got it, Brad.
There's Brock Heard with us, ESPN College football analyst and a big part of the show. This segment of the Brad Susmat Show on Sports 360 AZ is brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. When I talk about being all about you, it means the F-150. It means as you walk onto the dealership that you're not pressured into doing something immediately. I've pulled into Santan Ford on numerous occasions. I get out of the vehicle, the Ford Fusion that I'm driving, and someone will come over to me and say, do you need any help? And I will say, I'm just here looking. They say, well, if you have any questions, let us know. And that's about it to get you started. And from there, it's you take control of the situation. I was over at Santan Ford this last weekend for President's Weekend, their big sale. And there were people lined up waiting to get tables because it was so busy in there. And there wasn't anybody walking out. It was just they're getting deals done. Same thing with the service department. When was the last time your vehicle serviced? And you could sit and watch television and have a cafe to sit in and have very good people check back with you more than once on how your vehicle is progressing. That's what goes on at Santan Ford. Why don't you stop in for yourself or just go to santanford.com. Santan Ford, they're a big sponsor of the NFL Scouting Combine. Eric is going to Indianapolis today, and he'll be there through the weekend. That's at Santan Ford. We appreciate General Manager Tim Hovick and company and their support. All right, on the other side, some things that have caught my eye today. I got to get a little bit more into ASU and their awful showing last night against Colorado. U of A didn't fare much better. And other things going on in Arizona today. I'm Arizona-centric, if the Sun should make a deal or not. That's what we're all about here. Steve Keim from the Combine and much, much more to comment on next. I'm Brad Sussmat.
React and interact to our Facebook question of the day. Like our page at facebook.com/sports360AZ.
Sports 360 AZ, Brad Sussmat with you, and of course on AZ Central Sports. Checking us out, welcome on board on White Mountain Radio, and of course our website, Sports 360 AZ. Plenty of content, Arizona-centric. Just put up a column about Jerry Colangelo supporting John Junker, the former Fiesta Bowl executive, a letter that Jerry wrote on his behalf that is now out there that I find kind of interesting. Not surprising. At all, but just kind of interesting. And some thoughts on Arizona State last night. There's one national thing that I want to talk about. When I say thing, I shouldn't be so flip. The Ray Rice story happened yesterday and caused a real buzz about the Baltimore Ravens running back, this domestic violence incident, and the video has come out now on this situation. And if you're watching us on Sports 360 AZ or AZ Central and taking in the show, we're actually going to put the video up. And it's video doesn't lie on this. It is so disturbing to see Ray Rice, when you're watching this, trying to pick up this limp body out of a elevator. And it's so incriminating and so. And then you see the hotel security guy come over there and talk to him about it. And it's kind of like, well, let me pick up her legs here. This is the worst of the worst video that I've seen. Now, I don't know if she had too many drinks. I don't know that. But when you see this disturbing video and what it looks like, and TMZ Sports was able to get it. So he's dragging his knocked out fiance out of an elevator after the Atlantic City police say they assaulted each other at a casino. Now, the attorney for Ray Rice says, well, it was a minor altercation. And I'm laughing, I shouldn't be laughing. There's no reason, and this is always a debate. There's no reason for a man to touch a woman. There is no debate in my mind on this. Well, what if he's defending himself? There's no defense for knocking out a woman. There's no defense for hitting and slapping around a woman. There's none. And it was a very major confrontation. And so this video is going to be out there, and it's going to push people in the court of public opinion to just look at this on the surface. I'm wondering what the police report's going to say. This is a big-time player in the NFL. It doesn't matter if it's the 53rd guy on the roster, guy in a practice squad. This is getting such attention because Ray Rice is a big name in the National Football League. And you can do all the things you want around the combine and talk about, well, we can only control on the floor. No, what do you know? Ray Rice was scrapped today from a charity event he was supposed to be at and was replaced. Hey, let's get somebody over there to replace Ray. Yeah, that's probably a good idea right about now. Disgusting. Arizona State last night. So for all of you that were in this boat of, Herb Sendek's doing his best coaching job ever, and this is one of the best ASU teams that we've seen in many, many years. And I sit there, and I get ripped from head to toe on social media, which is fine. It's at Brad Sussmat. Knock yourself out. I get ripped to shreds because I merely point out, you need to get to a point, ASU, where you're having road games where fans are rushing the court for beating you. Nobody in Boulder, Colorado rushed the court last night because they ripped you apart. And ASU last night got out rebounded by 21. 21. And they have a center that's supposed to be an NBA draft pick. So before we get all excited about where Arizona State's heading, it's a big setback. Look, I get it. It's at Colorado. They're pretty good even without their best player, Spencer Dinwiddie. But I'm glad that there's a little bit of levity around ASU. Shaq McKissick had one of the all-time great quotes after the game. Shaq McKissick, Shaq in the box, whatever term you want to use for Shaq McKissick, he's a terrific energy guy for them. Quote, That shouldn't happen on Mars. I really don't know the explanation other than toughness, energy, and effort. Continuing quote, I guess we were living our little fairy tale and now we're back to Earth. Yeah, thank you very much. So beating U of A last Friday night was a little fairy tale, according to one of their own players on the team. I hope he doesn't get called out on this. You know, if the coaches or whomever around the program say, hey, man, you really shouldn't have said. No, he's speaking the truth. We get so we want instant gratification. Oh, my gosh, it's the biggest win ever. Yeah, well, guess what? You turned right around and you lost. And you didn't just lose. You got kicked in the head. Embarrassing. And Jaheed was only 5 of 15 shooting, as good as he's been. Last night, he had 18 points. He missed 10 shots. He took 15. He missed 10 of them. Not good.
Are you really surprised, though, that ASU laid an egg last night?
No.
I'm not either. I was out to dinner with a friend who's a huge ASU.
They were out to dinner with a friend.
Huge ASU fan. And yeah. I said, you think ASU loses by 20? He's like, nah, not 20, but probably like 10 or 15. And I said, yeah, probably. And the game was there for the taking. I mean, it wasn't like Colorado was shooting the lights out. At the first commercial break, it was like 6-4. Nobody was scoring, but ASU wasn't rebounding. And eventually, when you're not rebounding and you're not scoring, it's not going to end well. It did against U of A somehow. I don't quite know how, because it was really kind of a mirror of both games, except ASU could actually put the ball in the basket a little bit.
I just get tired, Erica. I get very tired of people wanting to just jump up and down on something and get so excited over one little game. Don't tell me that Herb Sendek's doing his best job coaching until the season is through. When you have a complete body of work, but it's like the 24-hour news cycle. One day you can say, oh yeah, he's doing his best job coaching. The next day they look terrible. That doesn't mean Herb's a terrible coach. It's just go through the ups and downs of the season before we start anointing guys or saying, and Paul and I even disagreed on this on Tuesday's show. Now, she thinks he's safe. I don't think he's safe. You know, get back to me when the season is over. Because if you lose at Utah, it almost becomes a must-win situation the following weekend.
Sure.
Your RPI is suddenly going to start diving the wrong direction.
And last night was a very winnable game against a good opponent. So if ASU would have found a way to beat Colorado, they would have gotten 20 wins, and they probably would have definitely punched their ticket.
Well, but it's like Syracuse losing last night to Boston College. Boston College isn't any good. I watched the end of that game. BC's not good. It was an overtime game. It's going to happen through the course of a season. How does Syracuse come back from that? Because they're going to be there. They're going to be there at the end. I don't know if U of A is a good team. I really don't. Last night, U of A had to get out on the break in overtime in order to get the victory.
O'Connell across midcourt. TJ bounced to Jefferson at the free throw line. Stops, goes around, leverage, lay it up and in. Great move by Jefferson. And the Cats lead it by 4, 62-58.
So they'd go on and they'd win in overtime. Utah had plenty of chances late in the game. Jordan Baczynski's brother was as wide open as I am right now sitting here at this table. And they could never find him. Like, never find him. Where the fans are all pointing. You could see the fans pointing and yelling, he's open! Somebody, anybody. Aaron Gordon was awful last night for the U of A. Let's be straight here. You know, for all the love and affection, he fouled out. He had 5 turnovers and he had 3 points. That's it. That's not what we've come to expect. But I do like what Sean Miller did last night. He gave Gabe York some significant minutes. Gabe York, if you're a U of A fan, is not a household name for any of you guys. Not a household name. But he had 15 points, along with Nick Johnson. You have to find the scoring that Brandon Ashley lost on the floor. Now, that Sean Elliott earlier in the hour was, it's great when you actually hear people say something. For Sean Elliott to say straight up, they've got to play perfect in order to have a chance to win March Madness, that could be said for any team. But when you're one of the best teams in the nation for most of the season, and then you lose Brandon Ashley, that's spot on. They're not that good now. They're just not that good. Can they be better in a couple of weeks? Yeah, and I think they're going to get better. Eric and I talked about this last week. When Duke would play North Carolina, the world would stop. Last week, the world stopped because it was snowing. And they didn't play. But tonight, Duke plays North Carolina. well worth your while tonight to watch Duke, North Carolina. It's one of the great rivalries in the game, of course. And there's some terrific talent on the floor. Plenty of content on sports360az.com. We are Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. Thanks for being part of the show. On AZ Central Sports, appreciate their partnership, Mark Hyland and company. Of course, we're on Twitter, at Brad Cesmat, C-E-S-M-A-T. Bring it, man. You don't like what I say, like it, dislike it, it's fine. I'm here every day doing this. We're also on Facebook, too. Thanks for joining us.